Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Jaguars This Week,
with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lugeman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and some guy named Tony Vaselli.
Who?
Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, welcome. Our final two-hour edition of Jaguars This Week begins right now on News Talk WOKV. Everyone's in the house, and the house is Jaguars Central for the fourth straight Wednesday. Not back at Latitude 30, and at this point we will not be returning this year, but we'd like to thank the guys down there, Phil and the whole crew. Allie, who's long gone, up in Indianapolis now working up there for them folks for the food.
Great food.
That they brought.
And I'd also like to thank Mrs. Logman.
For the pie?
Oh, the chocolate pecan pie.
You needed one more piece. Yesterday you just didn't get your fill.
Two thumbs up. And I'll probably have another piece because I'm going to take it home with me.
Now the question is, will your son, who's almost as large as you, get any of that?
Well, I'll try to hide it from him, but he's like a super sleuth when it comes to food. Yeah. He'll find it.
Yeah, that runs in the family, I'm sure. John Osher is here. You heard Vaselli. Logman is across the table. And we are here for the next 2 hours, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Jaguars finished the season Sunday in Indianapolis, if you don't know.
Tennessee.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm thinking Indianapolis because I was looking at the snow there. Did you see the snow there?
I'll be there this weekend. I'm not looking forward to it.
Did I ever see snow there?
No, no, no. Did you see the snow today?
Yeah, I saw snow.
As long as it clears out by Saturday.
That's where you are this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about a foot of blowing snow in Indianapolis today. So, anyway, in Tennessee, in Nashville, kickoff 1 o'clock. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show at 10, pregame at noon for the entire network, whistle-to-whistle coverage, Winn-Dixie postgame show, Southern Ford Dealers scoreboard show. Let's go back, as has become the custom on this show, at least for one more week, and talk about the Patriots game for a half hour or so. Where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, I'll go ahead and start with this. That was a game in which, you know, I think everybody thought that this could be an ugly game. And I give the team credit. Because they came out, they had some success early and played well early. Offensively, you know, were able to drive the field, getting the first opening drive touchdown since 2011. Defensively, they had two takeaways. You're playing one of the elite teams in the AFC at your place, and you really had them stumbling. And if you were able to generate more than just field goals in the first half, you could have gotten – you know, I don't want to say ever in control of that game, but you would have gotten a big lead to where you would have felt pretty comfortable.
But that, and that's where that game was lost.
Yeah, field goals, not touchdowns.
Yeah, because you could have been up 21. I mean, if they had taken advantage of stuff, they could have been up 21-24-7. You know, they had been showing a little of that in the previous two games. They had had the drive against the Jets where they had moved real well early, their best drive of the day, and then gotten the interception late. And I think the next week they got a field goal out of the first
drive,
if I'm not mistaken. So they had been shown signs of coming out and doing things well. I thought the Jets' drive until the interception was one of their best drives of the year. They used two or three different running backs, very creative. So that had been getting close, and it was good to see them go ahead and put the ball in the end zone on that first drive. I thought that was at least a small step in the right direction.
You know, but you know, at the end of the day, you go to yourself, where's that defense been all year? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going against Tom Brady. Tom Brady, who has never thrown an interception against you, and you make him look like just a guy. And the Patriots were, I mean, holy cow, in the first half there, I mean, you heard my comments about Bill Belichick and their defensive coordinator having a pretty much a sermon from Bill Belichick to the defensive coordinator at that time, and it was not good. I mean, they had the Patriots reeling. And I'm sitting there going, why couldn't they do this against the Jets? Why couldn't they do this against the
Dolphins, the Bills?
Ryan Tannehill. And I just don't understand that. I mean, and I know that sometimes, you know, performances differ from week to week. But still, you know, and I give them credit for the effort and everything, but I think even though you see that, it makes you have even more questions to that.
Jeff, you and Brian were there calling. John, you were in the stadium as well. I watched it this afternoon on the All-22, so it's hard sometimes to get the feel and of the sense Did any of you get the sense that the Patriots came out sleepwalking a little bit, maybe overlooked the Jaguars? Was that had anything to do?
I think that the defense came out and played really well early in that ball game. Their plan of attack was to get the ball to Brandon Lloyd. And they saw or felt, whatever for whatever reason, that's the guy that was going to get the ball. And Derek Cox,
I thought he played very well.
Absolutely magnificent in that ball game.
I thought that threw the Patriots off a little bit, too, that they couldn't get the ball to him like they wanted to.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that sort of disrupted things. Then you had the energy of getting that early pick, which, you know, that sort of play can carry the momentum for a while. And it seemed like they got the momentum early. They got the second pick, and that sort of pushed them to that lead. And then it sort of ran out and played a little bit more like people thought it would over the course of time, which was that the offense had a lot of trouble against the Patriots' defense, and it kind of came back to earth a little bit. And that's why I think Tony said it best when it was lost in the first two or three series when you couldn't turn those points into touchdowns or those opportunities into touchdowns.
You know, I didn't think they were sleepwalking because their second drive was when they put their foot on the gas. Remember that, Logs?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And we were breathless just trying to keep up with the action
as far as tempo.
Field. My goodness. I mean, it was just bang, 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 bang. And I had seen the Patriots Monday night and Sunday night, back-to-back weeks, and they had all the announcers had talked about 25 seconds per play getting it off, and I wouldn't be prepared for how fast it went. So I didn't think they were sleepwalking. I just think the Jaguars had a pretty good plan to confuse them.
Yeah, they really mixed it up. Mel Tucker did a good job mixing up. He mixed up, I think, more coverages in this game than I'd seen in previous games, and so credit to him. And on offensively, you know, you could debate, you know, early in that ball game, you know, with the Patriots at home and you've got two wins on the season, do you go ahead and go for it on a couple of those fourth downs where they were, you know, I think there was one at fourth and three.
Fourth and three, fourth and four, fourth and six were the three.
Yeah, I think you could argue that, hey, look, you know, what do you got to lose? You know, go ahead and go for it in that instance.
Well, especially the only reason I would have gone for it is, and again, not seeing the flow and the tempo except for on tape, but the overall thought going into the game is this is the highest – scoring offense in the NFL. You need points. I mean, three is not going to get it done. Is there really a big difference between 7-0 and 10-0, or you know, or do you have a chance if you put up 14-0, which is a now you're at two, a much bigger. You start getting momentum. You start getting a pile of points. So, you know, typically you would not go for it, but I think sometimes you have to look at the overall sense of what you expect that your opponent to do and what their strength is, and that's scoring points.
Well, in hindsight, it's always 20-20. And I also understand the reason why you go for the field goal in that situation because, I mean, you're a bad football team. You know, if all of a sudden you're at home and your drive ends and there's nothing positive out of it.
Agree. No.
All of a sudden you could be looking at the old thing, here we go again. You know, so.
No, and I think you could go, listen, it's not concrete one way or another.
No, right.
And so you can't fault – I don't think it's a fault of Mike Mularkey saying, let's kick the field goal, get the points.
Plus, they hadn't been very good on fourth down. I mean, now in the season, were they 8 of 23?
Yeah.
You know, which is basically 33%. It's not a very good number.
They were very poor on fourth down in Miami. Two fourth and ones in the red zone. They couldn't convert.
Josh Scobie's miss in the first half I thought hurt too because all of a sudden you have a chance to be up one more score than you would have been. Maybe that makes the Patriots press a little bit. But I didn't have a problem with not going for it because
– No, but I would have flip-flopped it, you know, because in Miami they went for it a bunch.
Yep.
And you got a young quarterback.
Right.
I would have taken the field goal opportunities in Miami, whereas –
And rolled the dice here.
Yeah, and with the Patriots scoring a lot of points, I would have been more apt to go for it.
Especially if you watch the week before against the 49ers. It doesn't matter how much they're down.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it, 31-3?
31-3.
I mean, and they didn't blink, and they didn't weren't phased, and came back and tied it up. So you had to figure going into this game that, listen, this is a team that's going to get it going at some point. Like they're going to figure it out.
I thought this was a little different for the Jaguars' defense, though, in this sense. Against the Jets, when it was 17-3 and then it was 17-10, you got the feeling in that game that the Jets were basically playing that out and figuring, you're not going to score enough on us to beat us. And I thought the Jags' defense did a good job, but I didn't think the Jets challenged them very much. In this game, late in the game, you got the feeling the Jaguars were getting a team off the field that was trying to do some things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was a much better effort this week. You know, similar circumstance, but considering this offense and the Patriots don't take the foot off the gas, the last two stands for the defense was pretty inspirational compared to what they had done the last month or so.
You know, speaking of the Jets game, you know, the two most painful games to watch this year have been the Jaguars against the Jets, and then the second one would be Tennessee,
sure,
against the Jets, which was a Monday night game.
So I was there. Don't remind me.
Wow.
I'm still trying to erase it from my memory.
Talk about two painful games to watch if you like to see some points and some action. You know, in this week's game against the Titans, which we'll get into more, I mean, it could be a painful game as well. I mean, they're struggling offensively, and this team here in Jacksonville struggling to score points.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to ask you about Chad Henne in the fourth quarter. Joe?
All right, Brian. Get a great deal on a Ford F-150 during Truck Month at your local Southern Ford dealers. Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, rolls on here on Jaguars Radio. Well, trying to figure out what you're going to do this New Year's Eve, how about Latitude 30? You can be entertained by dueling pianos that rock. It features musicians of Howl at the Moon. It's part concert, part sing-along, and it's all fun. $30 per ticket plus VIP packages are available. Call them at 904-345-2455 and reserve your tickets or table now. Remember, the last two dueling piano shows sold out at Latitude 30, so call them now, 345-2455, Brian.
All right. You know,
I wonder if they're going to play dueling banjos. They're at Latitude 30.
On the piano.
On the piano.
That'd be cool.
That would be really nice.
So, you know, there are quarterbacks that finish strong. I mean, you know them. I don't know. Brady, Manning, Breeze, Ryan. Do you think that there's an issue with Chad Henne not being a finisher? I mean, I'm just thinking about him now. Look, you realize he started 7 of 7. And in the first half, Henne was 15 of 25, 210 yards, a touchdown, a passer rating of 104.5. And he finishes with a passer rating of 59.9, 29 of 59, a touchdown, a couple of picks. I realize the picks drop it down. But, you know, the last couple of weeks he started out on fire, taking the team down the field, and then has tailed off dramatically. And his passer rating is amongst the worst in the AFC and the worst in the National Football League.
It's a problem.
It's a question.
And it's a problem. But is it all? But you could also say it's the bigger picture is this team has struggled in entirety coming out of the halftime.
Agreed. But I'm going.
But my point is
I'm going to
is it Chad Henne
or is it just part of?
Or is it just part of the overall? Whether it's halftime adjustments, whether it's coming out of the second half properly. I mean, because you can go the defensive side as well of looking up the third quarters we've had.
I'm not trying to blame it all on him. Just pointing at the quarterback.
No, I agree.
Because the first thing that popped in my mind after last week was the Houston game, where you have the ball first and goal at the 6-yard line, and you go backwards and you can't win it in overtime, even though you've got it at point-blank range. And then here, you get the ball first and goal. You know, what was it, the 6? Was it the 6-yard line? They get down
into the goal on the 6 and the 5-yard.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain quarterbacks that always score in that. And then I'm wondering if there are certain quarterbacks that just don't ever close the deal like that.
Chad didn't jump off sides.
Well, I'm not blaming him for all of it. I'm just wondering.
He didn't get beat and get hit as he's throwing the ball.
He started strong in a couple of these games. It tailed off dramatically.
You know, I had a thought on that, you know, because when Zach Potter jumped off sides, you know, seeing a defense, Mike Mularkey had talked about it after the game, and that the defense makes, you know, linebackers say move, and then they make a quick adjustment. And then that's something that he said that they were aware of and he talked to the officials about.
So why don't you just go first sound? If you know, I mean, that was the first, when I heard it, first thing I thought of is, and I watched the tape today, and I saw it. Actually, the first thing when I watched the tape today, I said, if you know they're going to do it, go first down. Get in your formation. It's third and one. You know that you need a yard. Let's line up. Chad, get underneath. First down, we're going.
Makes sense.
No motions, no adjustments.
If you're facing a team that does that.
Right. Well, it was a thought that popped into my head on Sunday night as I was driving home. Maybe this is a guy that doesn't finish it. And not just him. I get it. You know, the running backs that he's been playing with are not Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, the offensive line has not played well this year. It's not all on him. But just wondering if some of it is.
Is there anything to have – and I'm asking Tony and Jeff this. Is there anything to having so many new people, so many new parts, that you're better starting off because you've game-planned early and it's just tougher to finish with so many young receivers, so many different guys? I don't know.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Meaning you come out with a script – and then Belichick adjusts, and you can't finish it.
Yeah.
But on a script, you're fine until they adjust.
Yeah, but the adjustment is not the quarterback. The adjustment's your coaching staff making game plan adjustments.
But in this situation, I mean, if you watch the game, a lot of what was called at the line of scrimmage was the quarterback.
Right.
In this particular situation.
Yeah, but he's going in with a game plan of what they want him to do and formations and looks, and they're still in his ear.
I will tell you this at the end of that game. You know, when you look at the all 22, Chad Henne didn't have a lot of options. So it's not like, you know,
no.
At the end of the game, he was, you know, there's a guy open here or there's a guy open there. I'm with Tony that you can't say it was him because, I mean, even when you slow it down, which, you know, quarterback doesn't have that luxury of sitting there looking at it on tape and rewinding it and going, yeah, I'm going to go here. But he didn't have any options.
Well, look, the first interception in the red zone was clearly not his fault. I mean, he got hit. Chandler Jones hit him as he was throwing the ball.
I think he was trying to go to Cecil Shorts in the corner, and he got hit, and the ball fluttered to the middle of the field.
And Chung stepped right up and got it.
Right.
The second one was a high, you know, high arcing throw, and there may not have been anyone open
at that point.
Yeah,
the what?
He had to get rid of the last one at that point. I mean,
yeah, he was just throwing it up.
Right,
you
know,
hoping which is somebody what you want would make a play. Yeah,
right.
So I don't blame either pick on him.
I thought Chad was pretty solid in that game, and you know probably the best throw that he had. Is one that nobody even would recognize. The one in which he had Justin Blackmon going down the Jaguar sideline with one-on-one coverage, and he throws it up. And, you know, Justin's covered. But, you know, as a quarterback, you've got to trust your guy to make a play. And I thought that was a great throw by him. Just because of the decision to throw it to Justin Blackmon when he was covered in one-on-one and know that, hey, look, my guy will go make a play. And I expect Justin in the future to make that play. But I credit Chad for making that throw.
I'm not sure if this is the play you're talking about or not. But
there was someone wide open over the middle of the field at the same time.
But there was a play also
where I get what you're saying.
Chad threw it up and had a chance to be intercepted. And Justin went up and broke up the pass. I think
that was the goal line, yeah.
And I think Justin deserves a little bit of credit for that. Early in the season, there were plays where he was accused of not doing that.
Justin next year and the year after that makes that play.
Yeah, but he played defense and has done that a couple of times in the last couple of games where he's played defense on
which
a pass.
Which is a step up.
Which he's supposed to
but
do.
But the next step
right.
is using his body in little subtle ways to push the defender away and go up and make the play.
All right, in the last 3 minutes here, because I was trying to get to a point with the Henne stuff. Because, you know, we're still talking about who the quarterback is going to be here in the future.
And that quarterback, that discussion is not going to end.
Well, no, I know. That's why I'm bringing it up. Right, as you know, as you're going into this final game, because Mike Mularkey said when he took over he had a chance, and I guess my question is: has he proven anything
so
to
you're
you?
Saying there's a chance.
There's a chance, right? Has he proven anything to you to this point?
Where I'd say he's the starter?
No. That he deserves a chance to compete to be the starter next year.
Yeah, everyone deserves a chance to compete. When you're 2-13, it's not one thing; it's everything.
All right, is he 1 or 1A? You know,
neither.
He's zero. Sure he's
everybody,
they're
comes
all zero.
In as twos. Okay.
We're all twos. Okay. Whatever. There's no ones. 2-13. I mean, listen. I mean,
I'm not arguing with you.
I'm just saying.
There were moments where he looked so good and so sharp, and then at the end of the game, you're like, "What happened to the guy that started the game?"
Right. For the first couple of games out,
because you realize since that Titans game where he had 108 passer rating, he has thrown 2 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, and his average quarterback rating is 58.
And that performance he had against Tennessee was under duress. I mean, that was an amazing performance.
It was a great performance. 7 sacks.
The lead he had on that, if there's even a lead after 2 games, you know, you would say is gone. It's got to be an even competition at this point.
Sure. Well, I was going to go even further. I haven't seen anything the entire time that I would say he's my guy going in.
Okay. Well, so that was really, I mean, as we get towards this thing, towards the end of the season, which is just a few days away, that's the number one most pressing question, is it not?
No.
Because you're not – who's your quarterback?
No, that's
really?
Not the number one question.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff.
The number one question is what's going to go down.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I was thinking more in terms of the roster.
When you're 2-13, like Tony said, everything is open for question. And the number one question is what happens? You know, what's Shad Khan going to say? You know, at the end of the season, is he going to be happy with you know, a 2-win season or a 3-win season in the coaching staff? Is he going to be happy with the general manager and the job that was done there? I mean, that's the number one question.
But if people's reports around the league are to be believed, there were coaches that were not interested in this job because of the quarterbacks.
Which I don't believe that.
Okay.
You know, I think that's
and there's some credible people who are out there saying it. So,
well,
the reason I bring it up,
there's some credible people out there saying, you know, all this talk about Tim Tebow.
You're right.
Which is not anywhere near being accurate. So it's, you know, you take it all with a grain of salt.
All right. We've hit the bottom of the hour. Time for a little news, and we'll return with more Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Joe.
All right, Brian. Hey, you getting your Jaguars rewards? Sign up at rewards.jaguars.com and get cash back or credit for future season ticket purchases every time you shop online using the Jaguars Rewards website. That's rewards.jaguars.com. We will return right after news and traffic and weather here on Jaguars Radio. Well, Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. Bueller Swiss Watches available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, the Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, the Tallahassee Diamond Center in Tallahassee, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on. Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, welcome back, Jaguars This Week. Final two-hour version of 2012 next week. Of course, it's 2013 then, just 1 hour. And we are right here in Jaguar Central. Thanks to the folks at Latitude 30 for their hospitality all season long. We finished the season here at home, and you can join us, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. And the Metro PCS call-in lines are open right now. Joe, are you answering them, or is JP Shadrick going to answer them?
We're going to put JP to work.
Can't get enough JP.
He's begging. He's begging for work.
All right, Titans on Sunday, 1 o'clock in Nashville. Boy, I was looking at the Titans offensive line.
It's pretty
rough. Their center's
shape.
Now their left guard. Their backup center's in.
Yeah,
their right
but you
guard's
know what,
a new
though?
Guy.
Don't let the lineup there kind of deceive you.
I was just about to ask you what you thought.
Yeah,
about.
Because, you know, I put this together, starting lineup. You know, me and Brian use our little cheat sheets for game day. And right now, Michael Roos is the left tackle at left guard. They ended up moving in the Green Bay game. Fernando Velasco started the game at center, because Kevin Matthews has an ankle injury. But what they did is Velasco was at center, and then Mitch Petras, and I think I'm pronouncing that name correct, started at left guard, and he was so bad in that game that they benched him, moved Fernando Velasco back to center, and then, or moved Velasco from center to guard to take his spot, and then moved Kyle Devan in, who they even haven't had on the roster for very long. And then before the game, Mike Otto came down with a flu-like illness, couldn't even play, so they had a late scratch with him, and then Byron Stingley ended up starting his first game ever. So the Titans have major injuries along the offensive line, and there is only one guy left, and that's the left tackle Michael Roos, from what they expected to have for the season this year.
And Steve Hutchinson, the left guard, was playing at a pretty high level.
Yeah, he was okay.
And David Stewart, the right tackle, has been a guy
broken
who's been
leg
a long time.
The other guard, Leroy Harris, had a knee, and then Eugene Amano, before the season started, tore, I believe, a tricep. So, I mean, they have major issues along the offensive line, and Green Bay ended up sacking Jake Locker 7 times in that game. And even though he got sacked 7 times, a lot of those sacks were on him. He looked terrible against Dom Capers' defense.
It's the second time in 6 weeks they've given up more than 50 points.
They're not very good.
They're not very good. I mean, they fired Chris Palmer, their offensive coordinator, the day or second day after the game here in which the Jaguars beat them. And they promoted Dow Loggains, I guess that's how you pronounce his name, who was the quarterback's coach, passing game coordinator. And the results haven't really been any different.
Look, this is a game between two teams that have probably bigger issues than this game. And the topic in both camps and both media markets all week is going to be what happens next. And I think, you know, if you care about what happens on the field, then a topic is how are these teams going to focus. But the stories for both teams start on Monday.
Yeah, Bud Adams came out and said, I like Mike Munchak, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to keep him as the head coach.
Right.
But I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that was basically what he said.
Turned his TV off while he was watching the game in Green Bay.
You know, Mike Munchak's, you know, on the hot seat, what they do there, and the – I can't think of the GM who is only there a couple years now, and he's on the hot seat.
Reinfeldt, I believe.
Yeah. Mike Reinfeldt. But see, he's kind of distanced himself from the football.
Mike Reinfeldt has been moved up to COO. He's brought a new GM underneath
him.
Yeah,
that's right.
And so it's not Reinfeldt any longer. I'm not sure who it is.
It's Rustin Webster.
That's right.
He's the executive vice president, general manager.
He's been, I think, 2 years.
Yeah, so he's on the hot seat a little bit.
It's his first year as GM, because in the offseason they – promoted Mike Reinfeldt, and at that same time promoted the GM. So you're right, though. I mean, the game is not the attraction.
Right.
It's the what happens after the game for both teams.
Yeah, and it was interesting in the locker room today talking to different guys, and Jeff and I talked about this on Inside the Jaguars today. You know, we've all been in situations, you guys as players, me as the media, where you've walked in on Wednesday and Thursday and, you know, asked the questions about the game, and you know it's not on anybody's mind. And that was really the situation today. These guys will prepare the best they can. If it's anything last week, they'll be focused on the game to some point. But the question on everybody's mind is what next? What's next? What happens? Is it Monday morning? Is it Monday afternoon? Is there an announcement? What it's going to be?
Don't know.
Yeah, you just don't know.
You don't know. And for those that are going to watch the game on television, I recommend you turn the volume down, turn on the radio, listen to our broadcast, because they're reaching deep into the bullpen. CBS is.
Who do they have?
Shelly doing it?
Don Criqui.
Don Criqui.
And Randy Cross, who hasn't done a game in a long time for the network. You know, because this week, you know, there's no NFL Network Thursday night game.
Yeah, everybody's got the extra special.
There's no Monday night football game. Right. So the networks all have additional games. So Randy Cross hasn't done an NFL game probably in over a year. And Don Criqui probably is.
Could you call him Criqui?
I thought you were going to say they were going to call Pacelli out of the bullpen.
Criqui.
I'll be where I got a job this weekend, John. Thank you. I'll be at your old stomping grounds.
So
up in
to self-promote, turn on the radio broadcast, Jaguars broadcast. Can we get a little ching-ching on that too? I mean, for ourselves. There
He's
you
doing
go.
Double duty here now.
Beautiful.
So, thoughts on Chris Johnson, who had 800 yards rushing in 7 games leading up to the last time the Jaguars played. And he's done, well, he had 122 against the Jets. But
80 yards.
And 94 of those on
one play.
94, right?
Yeah.
Had 80 against the Jaguars last time. It's going to be curious to see how he plays, because I mean, he's actually got an opportunity at making history. You know, if he gets 168 yards on the ground, he's going to be one of only 4 players in NFL history to get to 7,000 yards in his 5th season. And if I'm him, I'm thinking I want to be a part of that club, which is Eric Dickerson, Emmitt Smith, and LaDainian Tomlinson. That's a pretty good group. So I wouldn't be surprised. And he had a little bit of an ankle injury at Green Bay, came out, ended up going back in the game. But if I'm Chris Johnson, and I'm not, and he's not me, make that a point.
There's no doubt. Yeah, the hair is completely different.
Yeah.
I'm going to be trying to get that 168.
And how good is he, though? I know he's good, but in terms of having him on your team,
he's not scary anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he's a dynamic player. He's a guy who can bust it from anywhere. But then he's also that guy who will turn in 2 or 3 games in a row where you're like, oh, where is this guy? I mean, I just wonder where he fits, because a couple years ago, 2,000-yard guy,
I'll tell you,
mentioned him with AP and Maurice.
I'll tell you how coaches have approached him and how it's changed. I'll never forget, what was his first year?
2008,
right? And I remember, I think the Jaguars' first game of the year that year was against Tennessee. And I remember having a conversation with then-head coach Jack Del Rio, and I said, tell me about Chris Johnson, because he was a rookie and he was number one on the depth chart. And he says, I'm going to tell you something. He said, watching that guy in the preseason, you have to take the Where's Waldo approach. And I was like, what is that? See, you know, the kid game where, you know, you try to find Waldo amongst all things. He said, you have to know exactly where he is at all times, what he's doing at all times, because he is that explosive of a player. And I don't think there's a defensive coordinator in the last 2-3 years maybe that has ever taken that approach with Chris Johnson.
Well, I think he's still a guy who can break it.
The 94-yarder shows you.
Big play, but he's a guy where everything has to be perfect,
right,
for it to work.
Well, then let me ask you the more
Meaning
pertinent question.
That he's not going to go take where there's nothing there, put his head down, and go find 3, 4, 5 yards.
Great. So would you pay him the $10 million
No. And this, the way the game is played anymore.
Because in February he's due a $10 million bonus.
No, I would not. I got to believe he'll be a free agent.
And if you're the Tennessee Titans, I mean, your first question to that question is, if we don't pay him, would somebody else?
No.
I don't think so.
He's just a guy, and it's very difficult to have a consistent offense built around him when it's 0-1-2-70, 0-1-2, you know, it just seems like that's tough to build an offense around.
But he's still capable of the explosive play.
But everything has to be
right.
Perfect.
He
but
can
man,
still do
it's
the 70.
Just, it's not like he's not what he was. For whatever reason, you know, when sticking your nose in there to get 4 yards, he doesn't do that anymore.
He goes down pretty easily as well.
And then
first contact.
You know, when you try to stick your nose in there to get 3 or 4 yards, all of a sudden those 3 or 4 yards sometimes turn into 10 or 12 or, you know, 13, 14, whatever. And he, and he
15.
He doesn't do that. Maybe 16 sometimes even.
I bet you, Jeff, he has the lowest yards after contact in the NFL.
Maybe.
I mean, that's a statistic they keep, and I'd love to go look at it. But I bet you, from what I've watched of him and how easily he goes down after contact, he has the lowest.
Might be right.
All right, Joe. Send it to break.
It's a guess.
All right, guys. Season ticket owners, don't forget to use your Teal Deals by signing up at TealDeals.com and downloading over $5,000 worth of gift certificates to use at merchants all over Jacksonville. That's TealDeals.com. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today.
All right, 7-8 minutes left in the segment. Let's go back to the Titans real quick, because when they were here, they walked into this stadium on game day last November, 16 sacks. They walked out with 23, and they got three of them on the first series. So knowing what you know about the Jaguars' offensive line, which is they're not playing very well, how do you match them up against the Titans' defensive front?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, against the Patriots this past week, they only allowed one sack, but there was some plays where the quarterback was affected from pressures. I think Chad Henne had quite a bit to do with that, with being very decisive early on in that ball game. You know, but there's probably going to be more change this week, which would make at least three consecutive weeks with a different lineup. You know, because you had Pazdor at left guard at Miami. And then this past week, Guy Wimper at right tackle. And then this week, if Uche Nwaneri does not get back from the head injury that he suffered this past game, which I'd be surprised if he does, then you're looking at three consecutive weeks. And in the week before that, I'm trying to think, because that was – so it would actually be
right
four consecutive weeks, because the week before that was Eben for
– Brewster.
Mike Brewster, right. And then Mike was before that. So that would actually be
– Manny.
Yeah.
Five different weeks with five different lineups
along the offensive line.
And Uche took his concussion test today, I believe, Mike Mularkey said. Didn't pass it. He'll take another on Friday.
If he doesn't pass by Wednesday, he's not playing.
Yeah, I mean, that, again.
Which is today.
Mike used the phrase, hasn't been ruled out yet. So it stands to reason that it's pretty doubtful.
And what do they do? I mean, do they just plug in Steve Vallos, who ended up playing in the game? Or you know, because I know they like Vallos as a sixth guy.
At this point, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you play him?
I thought Vallos played fine.
He played pretty well.
Yeah,
there wasn't any fall off when he came in for Uche.
5 straight weeks.
I mean, did you think so, Jeff?
No, I thought he played pretty solid.
Put him in there. Just roll it out. Let's go.
Right, you've seen everything else.
I mean, and that's not an easy defense to go against. I mean, they run a lot of different things up front. They do a lot of movement up front, and there's a really good player, and Vince Wilfork up in the middle. I mean, and I thought Austin Pazdor played pretty well. I think Vallos played pretty well. Brad Meester played well. I thought that they struggled a little bit at the tackle positions. I think Eugene Monroe didn't have a great game. I think Guy Wimper didn't have a great game, although it was a little bit better than Cameron Bradfield. You know, so I'm sure the Titans are going to be very confident going to this game, knowing that they had 7 sacks, and then also because they didn't do anything against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
And so much of the last game, you know, the line gave up 7 sacks, but a lot of that, as we recall when we talked about it, was miscommunication. It was not just losing one-on-one matchups in that game, so you would hope if they can, you know, solve the communication, you wouldn't have as many.
Don't know.
For what it's worth.
You know, that defense in Tennessee, they were actually talking about how much they had improved. And then
Aaron Rodgers came to town.
Then they meet Mr. Rodgers. And watching that film, he absolutely exposed every hole that they had. He is so good. So good. It's fun watching him on film.
Anybody in particular?
No. I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, he exposed Zach Brown, the linebacker. He exposed Ayers, the linebacker. Exposed the nickelback.
Mouton?
No. Nickelback is Sensabaugh. Cody Sensabaugh. Exposed him. You know, they had some issues at safety because in the first part of the game, Babineau was in there, and all of a sudden, Al Afalava. Is that pronounced right?
Close enough.
Yeah, he's in there. Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers had a field day.
A lot of exposures.
Yeah. Well, when you score 55, I mean, that's, you know, there's quite a bit of exposure going on. And then up front, I mean, the Titans didn't really do anything up front to stop the running game. You know, the Packers ran it very well with DeJuan Harris, formerly a Jaguar, mm-hmm. and Ryan Grant, I believe.
I knew it was one of those seasons when I'm listening to my Sirius Radio and ESPN, Linda Cohn and whoever else is on, and DeJuan Harris is the guest they're interviewing. I'm thinking, wasn't he like our backup?
And the next guest was DeJuan Underwood.
And now he's starting for the Green Bay Packers? Maybe the best team in football right now? Jeff, what happened? What did I miss? Did I miss something?
Don't know. He's finally got an opportunity, and he's taking advantage of it. Good for him. Because you know what? He showed some things in preseason over the last couple of years. And this year, let him go.
I literally, it was one of those moments you're just driving. I'm like, it was the 24th because I was out Christmas shopping. I do all my Christmas shopping on the 24th. And I was driving. I'm like, I wonder if that's the same DeJuan Harris.
You see him. He played very well on that.
Yeah, I know he did.
Snow game against the Lions on
Sunday Night Football. Good for him.
All right, so what are we going to talk about in the next hour? Let's liven this up a little bit, Baselli. What's on your mind besides the pie that's sitting in front of you right now?
You're scraping it.
Well, I'm trying. It's called self-control, John. I've already had one big piece, had a small piece, and I want a third, but I'm going to try to stop.
There's a lot more left.
All right, so when we come back,
outside of that,
still is 2 minutes away.
Yeah. We can talk about that. We can talk about AFC playoffs are pretty much settled, you know, some positioning, but big game still because, you know, Houston. We have two teams from our division going to the playoffs, and Houston Texans are kind of stumbling down the stretch and might find themselves from being the number one seed all the way to the three seed.
Yeah, but you know what? This is probably one of the most entertaining last weekends of the season that I can remember.
Well, then you got the NFC where in the playoffs, there's a couple spots still open. You got Dallas and the Redskins on Sunday night. Winner of that wins the division.
And the best team might be going as the fifth seed.
And the fifth seed.
Seeding at stake.
Yeah.
And then also spots open.
See, I disagree with that. I don't think Seattle's the best team, but they're a good team. Very good at home.
Looked pretty good the other night.
Right.
Yeah, that's at home. They're the fifth seed. They'll never find home.
Right,
again.
and that's what's too bad for them at this
point. But I think the Green Bay Packers are the best team in football right now.
Yeah, now that they've got healthy.
They've won 9 of 10. They're
going to
Woodson back. They got
Woodson's not back yet.
But he will be back. Clay Matthews is back. They're a good football team, Aaron Rodgers. You know.
And yet it wouldn't shock you to see him get beat. So that's where it's...
That would shock me. It wouldn't shock me. See, I mean, great story with Atlanta, number one seed. Can Smitty and Matt Ryan figure it out in the playoffs?
I hope they do.
I do, too. I'm rooting for them. And I think it's a great story. And you got the Minnesota Vikings have a chance to go... I mean, who would have thought at the beginning of this year that the Minnesota Vikings were going to have a chance for the playoffs if they win on Sunday?
Well, a chance for the playoffs... With a back that could break the single season rushing
and
record
with an ACL, with a quarterback that none of us think can play worth a darn.
No, that's amazing.
And if they win, they're in.
But the Adrian Peterson comeback is
top story in the NFL,
and the most amazing comeback story in a long time.
All right, time for news here at the top of the hour. We'll break and return with another hour focused on the National Football League here on Jaguars This Week.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Jaguars This Week.
With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lugeman. Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. And some guy named Tony Boselli.
Who? Inconceivable!
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Let the deliberations begin.
You can't handle the truth.
Here's Brian Sexton.
All right, here we go. Hour number two. A couple more pieces of Jaguars business. The first is, and we didn't mention it the first hour, but that Cecil Short's season is complete. So your thoughts on his 2012 campaign?
Well, go ahead, Jen.
I think it was an outstanding year for him, and watching him throughout the year, you know, from training camp to where he ended up taking himself this year. I mean, holy cow, what a great year. I think that Jerry Sullivan has done a wonderful job with him and Justin Blackmon. And Cecil ended up setting a couple franchise records, 4 receptions of over 50 yards, and then also 17.8 yards per catch, which is fantastic.
Yeah, in this era, I mean, that's like 1970s average. When you ran a lot and threw over the defense, you used to have averages like that. You rarely see 17.8 from a receiver who's catching more than 30, 35 passes.
Great.
So a remarkable year, and he comes up 25 yards short of 1,000.
21.
I'm sorry, 21, and which is too bad, but it should not it doesn't diminish what he did, which is improve from a guy who, as we talked about, Jeff, it's not that he just improved from last year. This is a guy who he had the catch against Minnesota that everybody remembers, but he was not playing a lot the first 2, 3, 4 games of the season,
mm-hmm.
and sort of had to force his way into the lineup. Earned everything this year, and, you know, credit to him.
But we were standing on the sidelines during training camp, and I think you were there too, when you made the comment that you thought he was the star of training camp.
Thought he was the best wide receiver in camp.
No, I think I remember you saying he was the best player in camp at one point.
Yeah.
That he was the guy. We were talking about, you know, a theme. I don't know whether it was for what you do with John on the web or one of the TV, what we were doing in the pregame TV. That was what it was. We were having to pick the star of camp for the mm-hmm. final pregame show, for the final preseason broadcast. And we were mulling over names, and you said, oh, it's Cecil Shorts in the
easy.
Very beginning.
Easy. And, you know, we saw some of those attributes last year. But, you know, after having a conversation with Cecil, I'll never forget this, and it just blew me away. Because I asked him about, you know, the coaching that he got last year. And and he just kind of shook his head, you know, because it was Johnny Cox, who was – the coach that got fired when Del Rio was uh-huh. fired and Mel took over, Johnny Cox got fired, and then they reassigned some coaches on the offensive side of the ball. And Cecil said, he said, look, he said, really the only thing that I learned last year was where to line up.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked. I mean, you're talking about a young draft pick wide receiver that the only thing he got from the coach from 2011 was where to line up in his splits.
And the thing about Cecil is, if you talk to Jerry Sullivan and you talk to people around him, it's how he approached the offseason from day one. And, Jeff, I recall you and I sitting there talking about it. I forget if it was OTAs or training camp. But you could tell how eager he was to listen and how much he wanted to be around Jerry and whoever was going to teach him anything. And you would think on one level that every guy comes into the NFL that hungry, that willing to listen, that willing to accept what you're being told. We all know from experience not everybody comes in that way. But he clearly showed that, and it's shown on the field.
And you're concerned, though. I mean, holy cow, mm-hmm. the one hit in Buffalo, and then it looked like he was out again
yep.
this past week here on the field. So you're going to be concerned about him going forward, him and LaRon Robinson.
Right.
I mean, you got two wide receivers that had head issues, you know, in this year.
I don't know in Cecil's case, though, and, again, there's no way to get inside of his head, so we don't know. But sometimes you hear about guys becoming susceptible to concussions once they get one or two, and that's the truth. But I don't know, even if he hadn't had one before, that hit that he took the other day was probably going to give him one. I mean, he's gotten blistered on both of those hits. So, I'm not sure if the second one was because of the first one in this case.
Yeah,
but
don't know.
Who knows?
And, you know, and also, I mean, Justin Blackmon's development yep. over the last, what is it, 6 games? Here's the numbers over the last 6 games. 32 catches, 586 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Pretty good.
Well over. Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, more than half of his production.
And now he is actually leading the NFL rookie wide receivers in yards. And the interesting thing about the game this week with the Tennessee Titans is that their wide receiver, the kid from Baylor.
Kendall Wright.
Kendall Wright leads the NFL rookies in receptions. He was inactive against the Green Bay Packers last week with a rib injury, and Justin is only 4 catches behind him. So if he doesn't play, and even if he does play, Justin Blackmon could end up leading the NFL rookies in receptions and yards, which you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the first wide receiver off the
board.
Well,
and the way
so
it's still,
that doesn't happen.
Yeah, but
yes.
The way he started was not very glorious. I mean,
no.
he's come on and give him credit. He kept on working and give us Coach Sullivan a lot of credit.
That's
a position group with all the injuries that if you looked at it right now compared to where you were 1 year ago, it is remarkably better. They have production, and there's hope at that position.
Well, they're just like the Titans' offensive line. Blackman's the last one standing.
Yeah.
Of the seven they started, he's the last one alive.
But I mean, you wouldn't
think Justin
him.
Deserves a lot of credit, because this is a guy who, because of what happened in the offseason and because of the way he started, and remember, there were two or three games where afterward what he did or didn't do was a huge topic, and there were people saying, this guy's a bust, this guy's this. And with rookie receivers, it's important to remember that they rarely come in cookie-cutter ready to go. And in the second half of the season, he clearly has shown improvement from the first and worked on some of these things that he was getting criticized for. Now, whether or not he was specifically working on that for that reason, but he's gotten better the second half of the season, and now you can see a guy who, with a good offseason, could be a much better player next year.
Well, we're talking about getting these numbers for Cecil and Justin with two quarterbacks now. I mean, so
right.
the quarterback position
and
hasn't been stable.
And struggling offensive line.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But you're kind of the resident wide receiver expert, having seen some very good ones in Indianapolis.
Wow, that's a stretch, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
Stretch? I mean, holy cow, what are you doing? I'm sitting there thinking of that toy that used to have Mr. Stretch. Is that what it was back when you were kids?
Yeah.
Gumby. Merry Christmas. What does he have
go
to
ahead,
do?
Go ahead, Brian.
What does he have to do better? where is his greatest area of improvement?
Hold on, let me tell the listeners that Johnny O actually has his chest poked out right now.
Expert wide receiver, guru.
Well, then he matches the
tweet
guy he's
that,
sitting
Jeff?
Next to.
Now, I mean, I think some of the things that he's going to have trouble getting better with are the things that are, I guess, not coachable. You know, the size and the speed, he's probably never going to have along the lines of an A.J. Green.
Right.
But he can get better as a route runner. He can get better as a guy who doesn't have as many drops. And I think the things that he can get better at are the things you can coach.
Okay.
That was not expert stuff, but it was there.
Well, you want me to throw it at you?
I mean, I'm pulling a picture
you're kind of a resident Johnny expert, Tony.
Well,
I
was just
Jimmy and Keenan.
Well, we got to go to – we can talk
no,
more
we got
about
time.
That.
Go ahead.
Well, two things. One, Pro Bowl came out tonight.
Yeah.
And Brian Anger was second alternate.
Greg Jones was third.
And Greg Jones was third. First time since 2008, no Jaguar was there. But as far as Justin Blackman, listen, I think he can, you know – another year, a good offseason, you know, working on his strength and his speed, his fitness, I think will be very important this offseason, which I think you see a lot of times from that first year to the second year, because now this is what you do mm-hmm. full-time. You get in the program. I think that'll help him.
His consistency running routes, too.
And I think his upside is huge. I mean, you don't have to be A.J. Green fast or Calvin Johnson big to be a great receiver. Reggie Wayne, a guy that you saw all the time, is
right.
not the fastest, not the biggest, but one of the best receivers in football.
Because by the way, that was where I was going with
because
that.
He compared him.
Because he does
him.
The little things right. And since
right.
John wouldn't go there, I will go there. That's who I'd compare him to.
And I've been saying since day one that's who I would compare him
yeah.
to. But and Reggie was not the guy that you think of now in his first two or three years. And I said all along that, you know, if Justin came in and had a Reggie Wayne type start first two or three years, people are going to write him off as a bust. It takes time for a guy like that. So the fact that he's done well this year, I think bodes well for him in the future
yeah,
because he has gotten better the second half of the season.
All right,
I think he can be really good.
One more topic before we break, and we were talking about it during the last break, and that is the rule with respect to the helmet-to-helmet hits, and in particular, the one where Jeremy Mincy and Tom Brady collided. And it looked, Jeff, from our vantage point, you too, John, like Mincy aimed right at the numbers, right where
well,
you're supposed to.
Let me say this. I think the whole rule needs to be revamped 100%, you know, 180, a completely 180 degree turn. Right now, the officials are being told to throw the flag if you even think there could be head to head. I mean, they're supposed to err on the side of saying there's head to head contact or defenseless receiver, whatever that means. I mean, that's so vague to me. I don't think they defined it very well. I think you have to go the other way. I think you have to make it. Take the quarterback out for a second because you have to deal with the quarterback completely different. Every other player on the field, I think, as an official, because the game is so fast, impact is so sudden, it is impossible for any official, I don't care how good they are, is to make a snap decision of where the player hit and whether it was head-to-head or forearm and shoulder pad to sternum, whatever, because it's so violent. I think you have to – they should be calling the flags and saying, we are going to err on the side of it not being helmet-to-helmet. We are going to try to limit those calls, and we will allow the league in the review when they have the clicker and go very slow, and they will determine whether it was head-to-head. And if it was head-to-head, then give them fines big fines to stop it. Because if you look at last week, the San Francisco 49ers played the Seattle Seahawks. Cam Chancellor made a perfect hit on Vernon Davis on the sidelines. It's what the NFL wants. Shoulder, forearm, to the sternum. Head was not involved. Did not contact Vernon Davis's head. It was such a violent hit that his head snaps back. Mm-hmm. He's thrown to the ground, and they throw a helmet-to-helmet defenseless receiver as he's catching the ball. Penalty. Another one, 3 weeks ago, Reggie Nelson hits Dez Bryant on the sideline. Shoulder pad, forearm, to the sternum right as he's catching the ball. Just how you teach it. Dislodges it. Perfect. They throw the flag, helmet-to-helmet. Last week, Pittsburgh-Cincinnati doing the game. Reggie Nelson, same player, was fined and penalized. I don't know if he was fined, but he was penalized for that hit. Cost his team big. Heath Miller coming down the seam. Ball is thrown a little bit high. Heath Miller goes up to catch it. And instead of Reggie Nelson having any chance of there being helmet-to-helmet, he went low and put his helmet right. and shoulder pads on Heath Miller's knee. Heath Miller gets up. He's furious. I don't blame him. Reggie Miller says, "What do you want me to do?" Then walk to the Steelers sidelines. "What do you want me to do?" And he pointed to his head. I can't. They're going to call a penalty for it. And so what they're doing is they're making, in my opinion, the game more dangerous.
Because they're making him aim lower.
Because they're aiming lower. Teach him to play the right way. If it's a bang-bang play, don't throw the flag. Let the league deal with it on Monday. Find the guys where need be. Otherwise, we're going to see guys with more injuries and more issues because of knees.
And the way you know it's gotten out of hand, Jeff, is that it's gotten to the point where if a safety hits a receiver across the middle,
it's a flag.
You're shocked if there's not a flag.
Well,
and that's how you know it's gone too far the other
way. I've got a bigger concern than penalties and fines. My biggest concern is defenders are going to start lowering their point. And when you lower the point, the head drops.
Yeah, it's more dangerous.
Lower, and then I'm worried that at some point a defender is going to break his neck because he's so conscious of avoiding, you know, a helmet-to-helmet contact and getting fined that he's going to lower it down, and then he's going to break his own neck.
Right. It's more. I think they're making it more dangerous the way they're calling it than if they would just deal with it afterwards because it's not fair to the officials because they can't make the call. I mean, even if you look at the Cecil Shorts, Patrick Chung penalty, Cecil Short goes up and catches it. First of all, shouldn't throw the ball with the safety coming down. I mean, right in the middle of the field, but that's neither here nor there. Cecil goes up and catches the ball. As he catches it, he sees Patrick Chung coming. He lowers his head. Patrick Chung leads with forearm, shoulder pad, and naturally your head's right there too as Cecil lowers his head trying to protect himself. Natural. And the penalty is called. Was it helmet to helmet? Absolutely. Was it instigated by the offensive player or the defensive player? From the look of it, when you slow mo the film, it almost looks like the offensive player. And what is Chung supposed to do? Not try to dislodge the ball? We're at the end of the game, fourth quarter, trying to make a play, game on the line. And so it's going too far. The game is dangerous. The game is violent. There's going to be violent hits. You're going to get a concussion if you play football. If you're not willing to sign up for those things, then go play something else.
All right, let's end it on that. We need a break. More to come.
Well, Sonny's Rip Pit Barbecue is the official barbecue of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Get ready for the playoffs and your favorite bowl games with Sonny's Game Day Wings. 40 mouth-watering wings, just $19.99. It's takeout only. Sonny is the first name in barbecue. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, Jaguars fans, you can be rewarded just for being social at the new Jaguars Social League. Sign up and sync your social media platforms at jaguars.com/social league. Earn points every time you post something Jaguars. And use your points to win great prizes, including a chance to win tickets to the Jaguars game in London. Ryan Sexton.
All right, short segment here. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. If you'd like to join us on the program, the Metro PCS phone lines are open. This is the final 7 o'clock hour of this program. You know, I want to just bring this up. Not that I think the Jaguars have anybody that belongs on the Pro Bowl roster this year, other than where Brian Anger was taken or Greg Jones was taken. But the Chiefs have 5 Pro Bowlers.
Really good on defense.
Yeah, that's got to be it.
And Jamal Charles is a very good back. But defensively, Tom Bollea is one of the better pass rushers in the NFL.
Yeah, and he had a suspension, I think, to start the year out too, didn't he? Well, I thought he
Who did?
Tom Bollea.
I think He had something going on, contract or something.
No, it was like
I think he was suspended.
Eric Berry's a very good strong free safety. Derek Johnson, one of the better middle linebackers. I mean, they have some good players.
Well, their offense is, I mean, terrible. You know, Kansas City and the quarterback play has been terrible. And
J.J. Watt made it, Jeff. I see here.
Well, that's a shock. I'm glad he's people are starting to recognize his greatness.
Did you put a vote there on the internet for him there, Tony?
I think J.J. Watt deserves it, and he would be my defensive player of the year.
That's as far as you'll go.
He wouldn't be the MVP, but defensive player of the year.
Who is the MVP, by the way?
He's got a shot. Peyton Manning, Adrian Peterson, J.J. Watt. One of those three.
No, Peyton Manning.
I would give it to Adrian Peterson.
If they don't make the playoffs?
I'd give it to Adrian Peterson.
That team?
In a minute.
They have 9 wins. That team doesn't win one game without Adrian Peterson.
You know,
I mean, Denver was a playoff team last year.
And also, you're getting an opinion on that from two guys who both underwent ACL reconstruction surgery.
He's the most valuable player.
They know how difficult it is.
He's the comeback player of the year. He's the offensive player of the year, and he's the MVP. I mean, what the Minnesota Vikings are doing is remarkable. That is not a good football team.
But Peyton Manning
also is not a good quarterback.
You know, you can't discount what he's done. I mean,
a
whole new team. You know,
they made the playoffs last year. Staff.
No, I know. But still, to do what he's done with that team, that is remarkable as well.
The whole new staff. I did not think he would be as effective in his first year away from that system, that comfort zone, because he had been with that system and those players for so long. I thought he'd be good.
Well, and he brought a lot of that system with him, but not all of it.
Right, but you've still got to have, you know, he doesn't have those guys that he relied on that he knew intrinsically would be at a spot. Dallas Clark and Reggie Wayne, he leaned on a lot in Indy's last years there. When you don't have that, especially for him, as much as he would rely on those guys.
Well, he brought Stokely.
Yeah, but Stokely's not Reggie Wayne. I mean,
no, I agree that, but DeMario Thomas is pretty dang good,
too. Yeah, no question.
Well, he's made him a lot better, especially the receiver, Demaryius Thomas.
Demaryius Thomas was good last year, though.
Yeah, but not like this.
Well, because they're throwing the ball
exactly,
now.
That's what I'm saying.
He had like 10 throws a game last year. What do you expect?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If you took a poll of former players, though, and they were the ones voting on MVP, I guarantee Adrian Peterson would win it.
And you got credibility with me. Yeah. You're right. You've had the ACL injury. You understand what it is.
What's your mark? Jeff, I remember you and
ACL too, once.
The week before the preseason, I mean, I had the season opener. Flat out saying there's no way that he would be a factor.
I said there's no chance he'll be a factor in the game we played against them, and it'll take half the season before he feels back to himself.
Right, and what conventional wisdom is that's how it would be.
I thought the only way that he was going to be active in that game was just because he's Adrian Peterson and he wants to be active. I didn't think that he would be active because he was ready to contribute.
He contributed.
I mean, we're talking. Yeah. When did he have the surgery?
It was late. It was November.
It was late.
He heard it December 25th.
Surgery was in January.
Okay, I was thinking, yeah.
December 25th, he blew it out.
And surgery was
surgery
in
January. And under a year.
And it was more than just the ACL.
Under a year.
We'll know that.
Under a year.
That was what the news story said.
He rushed for over 1,900 yards.
Well, and Tony, you made the Pro Bowl the year after you tore yours.
I played left tackle. I didn't run the ball.
But you also – and even all that said – you said it wasn't until week 7 or 8
that
you
week
were right.
Yeah, I played fine the first 6 weeks. I mean, I was good. I mean, I wasn't a liability. I played fine. I wasn't feeling like where I could go out there and play the way I wanted to at about week 7.
Yeah, and for me it was halfway through the season to where I felt normal. I mean, that's amazing.
And I tore mine in January 1st or January 2nd, had the surgery 2 weeks later.
And see, I did mine. When I did mine, I did it the second game of the season in 1992.
Oh, so you missed the whole year.
I missed the whole year. Came back in 93 and didn't feel right until halfway through that year.
Yeah, you're not as tough as AP and I.
I'm not.
He tore the ACL and MCL. He tore the ACL, the MCL, and damaged the PCL. So it was a very serious knee injury.
Yeah, they showed a replay of his knee injury. I saw it.
It's brutal.
The knee goes the wrong way. I mean, it's disgusting.
All right, Joe. News, please.
You got it, Brian. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working? Well, the 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealers today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Take a look at news, check the weather at the award-winning WOKV newsroom, then the last half hour of the two-hour version of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better.
All right, about 23 minutes left in the program this evening.
I'm sad. Last two-hour show of the year.
You don't look sad at all.
I am.
You look full.
He looks full.
I'm not full. I could eat that whole pie without a doubt. Without blinking.
Pecan pie was pretty good.
Outstanding. I love how she... Because my wife makes an outstanding pecan pie as well. But your wife puts a little chocolate in there.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, it's good.
Will it be better with ice cream at home?
I like whipped cream. I'm a whipped cream guy.
Speaking of Cool Whip whipped cream, by the way, did you know?
My wife makes homemade whipped cream. Oh, so
do
good.
Do you know that Cool Whip has a new cake icing out, and it tastes very much like Cool Whip?
Really?
Yeah, the wife got it for the holidays.
How was it?
You need to try it on that.
Sounds like Tony's making a stop at the store.
All right,
Winn-Dixie, here I come.
So let's look at the you want to start in the AFC or you want to start in the NFC?
For the games?
Yeah.
Are we doing
playoff scenarios.
No
not
playoffs.
Games, but playoff scenarios.
Where
or do you
want to
go through the games first?
Well, AFC's easy.
How about the I got them right here, the ones that mean something, all right? I got the list. Houston at Indianapolis.
That's for home field. I mean, that's not, that's for a bye in the first week and home field.
Yes. If Houston wins,
they have home field.
Number one seed, home field throughout.
They lose or the three seed if the other two win.
Exactly. Which is very interesting, which makes, I mean, holy cow, you have all top three positions up for grabs in the AFC.
And
bonus weekend.
Indianapolis is set in at the five, but they have said they will play their start. They'll play their guys.
But do you get the idea that it's that scary to go to Houston if you're a good team?
No, but it's that scary for Houston not to be at home.
Right, I agree with that. But they're not a team that you think of as, boy, we just can't go there and
the Vikings
can't go there
just
and
went
win.
There.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
Well, where are they stumbling?
Their secondary, if they play good quarterbacks, their secondary is not great.
Well, Aaron, how do they only score
Arian
6
Foster
points?
Had to lead the game with an irregular
heartbeat.
Yeah, well, I saw that.
If they get behind, I've said it all year, or not maybe at least half the year.
They're in trouble.
They're not a very good drop back passing team. Matt Schaub is not. They don't have the weapons. They have Andre Johnson.
Right.
And outside of that, they do not have another receiver that scares you in a pure drop back passing. When they can run the ball and run that play action pass off the stretch
money,
and the naked,
money.
They are so hard to stop. But if you get a lead and you get up, and their defense is not the same as it's been because of the injuries. Brian Cushing hurt them big time. The outside other guy, what, Brooks Reed?
Yeah,
yes.
He's been back.
But he was out of the game.
He was out again.
He got hurt again.
Yeah, okay. He's not himself.
But you know what?
Connor
he hasn't been that good anyway.
Well, but he's a guy. Connor Barwin's not having the same year. If J.J. Watt's not getting off, it's not like. And those linebackers, they've had a number of injuries. Jonathan Joseph has not been the same guy. He's been hampered with a groin all year. I mean, they're just not the same team because of injuries. And
it's the offense, though. That's the explanation. 6 points for the Houston Texans? I mean, that didn't seem possible.
Well, even less than last year, were they a high-scoring team? They were grinded out, run the ball, play action pass, control the clock.
But nobody keeps them out of the end zone.
Nobody scares defenses anymore in Houston. You know, when they had...
if you've got a good defense?
Well, not only that,
you can take them away?
The right side of their offensive line's not very good. No one talks about losing Eric Whitson and the right guard Breisel to the Raiders. Those were two huge losses
good
because
players.
They had a balanced offensive line where they could run right or left. They could power football. Yeah, they had Arian Foster. They had Ben Tate. And then the play action pass off, that was very difficult.
Well,
to
and then the other tight end, too, that they lost. Dreesen, I believe.
Yeah. Dreesen went to
that
Denver.
That is a big loss.
He went to Denver.
Dreesen was a big loss. The guy that's in Baltimore now, Jacoby Jones.
Vonta Leach is there, too.
Yeah, I mean, you start losing guys like that. I mean, you're losing weapons.
And then you have injuries on top of that.
Well, and then they have a salary cap that's maxed out. I mean, they have almost no flexibility. Remember, they gave the big deal to Schaub before the season got going. Right as the season got going, so they've got some issues there.
All right, next game that's got some implications, the Miami Dolphins at the Patriots.
Patriots have to win to make sure they can keep home field. I mean, keep at least a bye because they have the tiebreaker against the Broncos in head-to-head.
You see that by the way that Tom Brady reacted to the way that
– Love it.
Yep.
I mean, he was so angry after the win here. Isn't that what you want?
Miami's a good team, though.
I don't.
But they're not going to beat New England.
Not up there.
No. No, but you know what, though? That's That's going to be an entertaining game because Miami Dolphins will give them something.
You bet. Yeah. And it's a divisional game.
Yep. Next one, Kansas City at Denver.
Denver has to win. If everyone wins, and even if Denver does win, they're still the three seed because they lose the head-to-head matchups against both New England and Houston. And I believe that's the first tiebreaker. Is that not right?
Well, put it this way. If Denver wins, they're a minimum two seed.
Oh, so they have the head-to-head against New England then?
Yes.
No,
yes.
New England beat them.
Well, it must be conference.
It's record. It's record. New England's
Denver
only got 11 wins.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Right. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So they win. They're minimum number two right. seed. They could advance to the one if Houston loses.
Right.
So Peyton needs help from the Colts.
Yeah.
To get the number one seed.
Kind of interesting there. Yeah.
But for basically what you're looking at is the Broncos will be a one or two seed. And unless
maybe not,
I don't. They're not losing to Kansas City.
Right, they're not going to lose Kansas City.
There's no chance. I can see the Patriots. I mean, I can see the Patriots. I don't see losing to the Dolphins, but I can see the Colts beating the Texans up there. It's going to be emotional. Chuck Pagano's going to be on the sideline for the first time. They're going to come out flying. I think the Texans are questioning themselves. I could see the Colts winning that game.
That's an interesting philosophy change for the Colts too, because they would have never played starters.
No.
Did you read Reggie Wayne's comments this week?
Yeah, Reggie. Well,
what did Reggie say?
Just that, I saw some of them. Something to the effect that he doesn't, A, think they're a veteran enough team to take time off.
We're too young to rest.
Yeah, no players ever want to take the time off anyway. So.
So the Texans and the Broncos, the Texans have the best record.
Tied with Denver,
and then
but
New England.
They got the advantage. Head to head.
New England has one game back. Just want to make sure.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Chicago Bears at the Detroit Lions.
Chicago has to win, and Minnesota has to lose to get in.
Here it is. The Bears remain in the mix for the playoff berth. Chicago can advance to postseason with a win on Sunday, combined with a Minnesota loss.
Right.
Right. Like Tony said.
I think I just said that.
I just want to make sure. I'm just reading it out verbatim.
I do these national games. I have to know all this because I do all week.
All right, next one, Philadelphia Eagles.
He's questioning me, John. Did you see that? He's questioning me.
Philadelphia
Eagles.
I didn't question him.
It hurts. A little bit.
Inside.
Yeah, a little bit. It hurts.
Philadelphia Eagles and Michael Vick at the New York Giants.
And the Giants need.
The Giants have to win.
And they need the Vikings, Bears,
and Cowboys to lose.
Which all could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because the Vikings play the Packers. The Bears
and the Packers have to win that game to make sure they stay with a bye.
Right. And the Bears play at Detroit and the Cowboys play Washington.
Did you ever think the Giants would stumble like this coming down the stretch, though?
No, but that's only because I think we all believe in their head coach and Eli Manning and that defense. But if you watch them, and I've watched them a number of times now, the pass rush does not get home like it has in the past. They're not rushing the pass the same way.
And they were Justin, so built on
Justin
that.
Tuck is not having a very good year. JPP is not having a great year.
Only six and a half sacks.
He's not getting to the quarterback. He's not being disruptive. The secondary that was covered up because of the great pass rush is being exposed. And Eli Manning is not very good right now.
No,
and part of it's because the offensive line's struggling. David Deal is up there in age, and he's had to play right tackle because Sean Locklear got hurt.
But you know what? You put Aaron Rodgers behind that offensive line, he does fine.
Yeah.
Because look what his offensive line in Green Bay.
Yeah, that's fair. It's hard to argue that. Hard to argue that.
All right, next game, Green Bay Packers at the Vikings.
Packers have to win to keep a bye, or they need to win to keep a bye, and then the Vikings need to win to get in. If the Vikings lose and everybody else loses, they're still in.
The Packers will lock up the bye with a win or losses by both San Francisco and Seattle. No, you didn't have the ends on that. So
I understand that, but my point is, I think for all our listeners, they need to, as they watch that game, it's important for the Packers to win. They need to win the game.
All right, let's take a break, and then let's come back and look at the schedule and talk about those particular games. Jaguars this week, final 15 minutes or so of the final two-hour show. Joe?
Well, it's Wednesday. That does mean Jaguars this week. It's also No Credit Check Wednesday at Southside Kia and Kia of Orange Park, home of the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. Six Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart, more fashion, less price.
All right, let's talk games in particular and see what you think. We'll start with the Buccaneers at the Falcons. Falcons look like home field advantage throughout the entire playoffs.
No, they
had
it
last year,
too. Locked up.
Right.
Nothing to play for.
But they didn't have. They had it last year, too, and they lost it. So what do you think?
What will they do? You know, I mean, how are they going to play that? Are they going to rest them? Or are they going to
– may not matter against the Bucs.
Well, it may not. But, I mean, you're talking a staff and an organization
right.
with Thomas Dimitroff and Mike Smith that have a lot of pressure to win starting next weekend.
I would play every – I would start everyone unless they're hurt, and I'd play them for a half. I just think taking two whole weeks off from playing football and then expect to turn it on – when it counts more than ever, I think that's hard to do. And so I would play guys. I'd play them a half.
Okay. How good are they?
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. If you tell them you're going to play a half.
I would tell them.
Yeah.
I'd say you guys are all playing.
How good are they?
I would tell them we're trying to win the game. And then at halftime, I'd say, all right, boys, we're done.
I don't think I think they're good, but
they're not
I don't
great.
Think they're great.
Where are they weak?
I think they struggle stopping the run at times.
I think, stopping the run and then also running the ball at times.
You know where they're weak? When Green Bay comes to town, they're weak.
Yeah.
That's what scares them. I mean, that's what has to scare them. That's a bad matchup.
And can they generate enough pass rush going against, you know, a team like Green Bay? Are they physical enough to stop a team like San Francisco?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I hope they do well.
I just want to win at least one game. I mean, I want them to win the Super Bowl because, you know, love Smitty. But I just hope they win one game because the fear is, do they get blown out of there if they don't win a game?
Boy, I don't think you can blow out a
no.
team. I mean, it puts pressure on them, but you can't blow out an organization that just had the league's best record.
Well, you don't want to get the Marty – was it the Marty Schottenheimer rap?
Right.
You know.
You don't want to get it, but you can't – I mean –
I'm not saying they're going to get fired, but I'm saying you talk about pressure in
a
miserable offseason.
Yes, no question.
You got to win one. I'm rooting for them.
If Matt Ryan is on his game, they are tough to beat because he's got Roddy White, Julio Jones. They're so good.
Well, here's the thing. You look at it, they're going to get the bye. Most likely it will be them and the Packers getting the bye, meaning the 3 seed most likely will be the 49ers. The 4 seed will be then the – that will be the Redskins. I'm just saying. So most likely so that means week one, if you're Atlanta, you're going to get the Redskins, the Seahawks, or the Vikings, Bears, Giants, one of those three.
And you'll win.
And so you think against all those teams, the only team I don't think they want to see out of that group, frankly, is the Giants.
Because they just walloped him.
And they have playoff experience.
And it's a mindset.
Yeah, it's a mindset.
I wouldn't want to see the Seahawks.
Oh,
I know they're on the road. But
I think on the road, I think that team, Richard Sherman might not be there with the suspension, so now you're going to be down.
They already lost one.
You're going to be down two corners against that team, not having your two corners with Roddy White and Julio Jones running around.
150 points in 3 games.
I think the
– Yeah, but, I mean, look who it's against.
Yeah, the 49ers, they're awful.
I think the rookie quarterbacks –
No, I know what you're saying.
Come on.
I think the rookie quarterbacks – will be exposed in the playoffs a little bit. The teams led by rookie quarters.
Maybe not.
I think they'll play okay. I just think those teams. And so I think, looking ahead, you don't see the Falcons being beat the round one.
All right, we'll leave the Jets and the Bills off the table here. Go to the
playoffs.
Come on,
that's a big game.
Playoff games only.
That's about like what the Jaguars in Tennessee.
How about McElroy getting 11 sacks? Getting sacked 11 times.
Games with meaning here, and then we'll work our way back. Bears at Lions.
Oh, gosh.
It's got playoff implications.
Well, it's in it.
Neither team's.
Can Megatron surpass 2,000?
I think that's the whole story. Because I don't think the Bears are very good.
Now, since they stopped. When they got hurt on defense and stopped creating turnovers, they became very average.
So, it's in Detroit?
It's in Detroit.
Bears win that game.
I think the Bears win.
I don't know.
I don't either.
I'm not sure about that game.
I'm not either, but you have to pick somebody, so I'm picking
Lions
the Bears.
Lions are really, really – I mean, they're going to finish 4-12.
Bad.
It's amazing.
With that talent?
If they lose that game, they're 4-12.
They're really bad.
Easily the disappointment of the year.
Is Jay Cutler playing?
Yes.
Yes.
Take the Bears.
All right, playoff implications. Texans at Colts.
I'm going to go with the Colts. I mean, I think the Texans are a better team. I think with Chuck Pagano coming back, I think the emotion, that place is going to be rocking.
Texans.
I think the Colts are that team that just has something a little special this year.
If the Texans can't win that game with home field on the line, that's trouble.
Well, I think it's trouble for them anyways. I don't see them getting out of the first round of the playoffs. I mean, their first round, which would be the thing at the bye.
I think the Texans win that game.
Packers and Vikings.
Packers. But I hope AP gets.
He's not breaking the record. He's not going.
What's
for
he got to have?
208.
That's too much.
You got to rush for 208. He ain't getting that.
And Green Bay's got their swag going on defense.
Yeah. Cowboys.
I'll bet he can get it, and they still lose the game.
Mike.
Cowboys at Redskins.
Game of the week.
Great game. I think the Redskins win.
Game of the week, and definitely the Redskins. It's in Washington. Sunday night football, and that place, that city.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be rocking.
Has gone bonkers for RG3.
I was there for the Monday nighter against New York, the Giants, and it was a fun place to be. The atmosphere was.
They've been waiting so long.
It was rocking, and after the game, they're chanting and they're singing. I mean, it was what a great atmosphere.
Couple more games of interest, Ravens at Bengals.
Doesn't mean anything.
No.
Both teams are set. I actually don't think it's a great game because both teams are set in their position, and whether they win or lose, they're going to be right there.
Ravens are probably going to rest a bunch of guys.
They need to. They're old.
Yeah.
Eagles at Giants, Michael Vick.
Giants got to win that one. Although I can see them losing it. They're playing so bad.
That game has appeal, though.
It does.
Just because,
well, the Giants
know,
are still in it, and Michael
Giants,
Vick.
You know, Super Bowl champs.
Andy Reid's last Michael game, what Vick. A great legacy he's had no matter what this last year's been.
But will it be his last game?
Oh, yeah, he's done. They're blowing him out. He'll be fired Monday.
Dolphins or Patriots?
Patriots.
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 All right, then let me just run down these other games that we didn't hit. Jets at Bills.
Who cares?
Yeah, for the purpose of the last
Bills.
10 minutes
I'm going to take the Bills.
I'm taking the Bills.
Bills. Sure. Why not?
Because it's in Orchard Park, right?
Greg McElroy's the quarterback.
Yeah. Bills.
Browns and Steelers.
Browns.
Boy, how about that?
I mean, the Steelers are done in the sense of mentally. This is a team that's used to playing in the playoffs. Ryan Clark had one of the best quotes I read because I was doing the game last week. Before the game, he said, this week is easy. It's not a job. The passion, the emotion. He says, if we lose, it'll be a job next week.
That is a great quote. Panthers at Saints.
I like the Panthers.
Here's the question. Do the Saints come back next year?
Come back? You mean
– Are they good? I mean, yes, are they back to what they were?
Yeah, I think they'll be good again.
I don't know, man.
They have Drew
their
Brees.
Defense has got issues.
All right.
Big issues on their defensive side of the ball. But, you get a
Spagnuolo
little bit –
Spagnuolo's a good coach. It's another year under his program without all the distractions. I think they're contending for the division again.
Well, that's the perception. I think that'll be tougher – Then
you're the wide receiver expert, so I'll submit to you.
And how many points did the Seahawks score against the Rams?
Not as many as you think. I think that Rams defense is good.
Yeah. And the Rams are one of those teams, they feel like they're building something.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great night, everybody.